You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You can't win anything with kids.
I would love it if we beat them. Love it.
How much are the players looking forward to Arsene Wenger arriving?
Welcome to the Phoenix Five's first ever show. I'm Paul McGrath alongside Lee Harper, David Graham, David Holland, and we're supposed to be Adam Miller, but that fat cunt didn't turn up. So each week we'll talk about various topics based on football in the 90s. It could be about Serie A, or who was the better striker, Batistuta or Del Piero, or in our own homeland of who was the better midfielder, Ince Keane or David Batty, or just talking about referees in the 90s. So the first one I'll start us off with is, so why was the 90s such a better era than the 80s? We never got to see much of the 80s football as we are 5 and 6. But if you've seen things on YouTube and you've lived through things in the 90s, you know a lot of what went on in the 80s. It can be argued that most things in the 90s were just so much better that a generational issue, you always think better of your era. But we all know that fans in the 80s were seen as hooligans. In 1985 alone, people saw the year of the Herschel, the Bradford disaster, and the Luton vs Millwall riots. And let's not forget Hillsborough. Grounds of health and safety were a huge concern compared to the 90s and the 2000s. And when England teams were not in Europe for most of the 80s due to violence, and England fans were just seen across the board as thugs. The total lack of access to watch games live. Most of the year was focused on the FA Cup final that had any real build-up. That was the only real game that you got to actually sit on a Saturday and watch and take in. A lot of the fans now of similar age, and even some TV pundits, do seem to only remember football when the Premier League began. But that was what's so good about the 90s. There were so many teams competing to win leagues each season. Man United, Arsenal, Blackburn, Leeds, Liverpool, Newcastle, and even Nottingham Forest, who finished third in the 94-95 season. The 90s, we saw so many characters burst into life. We started to see the foreign invade our shores. Paolo Wanchope, Zola, Asprilla, King Eric, and let's not forget Thomas Brolin. The 90s, we still got to see a contact sport. And yes, it was a lot safer playing than the 90s than it was in the 70s or 80s. But we still got the best of both worlds. The blood and thunder of Vinnie Jones, Razor Ruddock, Julian Dix and Stuart Pearce. We all tried to recreate the tackles in the park or in the schools and try not to injure your mate too bad. Any of those players would survive in the modern football? I'm not too sure. They would have a massive amount of red cards if they were to still be playing. 90s football was an era where you could afford to go to games and it was still a working man's game. The cost of a ticket in 92-93 was around £7.50 compared to about £33 now. We had chairmen who were seen as custodians, the Edwards family at Man United and the Hall and Shepherd era of Newcastle, and not forgetting Deadly Doug. There was a connection between fans and owners. In the early 2000s, we started to see the change of football being where sport became business. And the launch of Sky in the 90s was massive. It was a game changer. It kickstarted the massive following that football then become as we know it now. Football, football, football. We had Sky, we had football matches every week, build-ups that were hours on end. We had the launch of magazines, Match, Shoot. It was just huge. Then we had TV programs like Soccer AM and Soccer Saturday. So that being said, football in the 90s was the era to be part of. So this week, we're going to ease you guys in with less of a debate and more of just a trip down memory lane. Football in the 90s, what do we miss? Is it Robbie Fowler wearing his nose strip? Was it tiny players wearing XXL shirts? Or was it the real wave of exotic players, sign-ins like Janino, Emerson, and Fabrizio Ravanelli that were actually, you couldn't go on YouTube and have a look at. You had to wait for they come in the Premier League or watch Serie A. So Lee, I'm going to start off with you. So in the football in the 90s, what would you say you missed the most?
Well, if I'm quite honest, in the 90s, I didn't really watch much like live games because obviously I didn't have Sky. So mainly for me, it was watching Italia 90 on Channel 4, the odd FA Cup game. Obviously, Match of the Day was massive for me. And when we was at school, I 10:20, I used to set my alarm for it. That's all I ever used to watch. So, yeah, well, like I said, I didn't really see many games. I was mainly highlights. So, like the end of the late 90s was when I watched probably more games. But yeah, I don't really have that much of a recognition in early 90s football, really.
Well, Match of the Day was the thing, wasn't it? Match of the Day was everyone's football. We used to come into football on a Monday, and we might have seen one live game, and it would have been, if you went live, like QPR, so a QPR game, an Arsenal game, or a Fulham game. And you come in the Monday, talk about that, or you'll talk about what you saw on Match of the Day. That was what the 90s was about. It wasn't about the soaked in football as we are now. David Holland, what's your memories of the 90s?
Keeping you lot out of the football team. Loved that. Straight out the gate, I'm off with that one. You know what I mean? No one was taking right back. I loaned it to Graham for a little while. I had a broken leg. And then,
that was your 11.
As soon as I was out of the cast, Graham was never seen again in a football shirt.
Now that's Joe. That bitch, Joe.
Yeah. I'm more thinking, you know, like the 90s and that Euro 96, like that is, you know, like from then, later than that, that's when I really start to remember. Like, I played for West London Rangers, all the old East Acton boys, and I played for him. And the bird, funny enough, was the manager. And it was England Holland, and we had to go to the IMAX in Leicester Square and watch it in the cinema, thinking, oh, it's going to be like, it's going to be a tight game. And then we're 4-1. Like, the whole cinema is going absolutely mental. Right? That's always stuck with me because, one, it was an unbelievable result. And it was, it was just amazing. It was amazing. Yeah, and like, from then on, I start to remember stuff.
I kind of agree with that, really. 96 was probably the first big tournament that I kind of remember. Obviously, 94, I do remember, but England, we weren't even in it. So, 92, I've not really got much recognition of. I think Denmark win that.
Denmark only qualified because I think Yugoslavia broke up or something. They qualified, they broke up, so Denmark got like a wild card. So they shouldn't even have been in the tournament anyway and ended up winning it. Something like that, if I remember right.
Well, Dave, what's
David Graham? John Jensen.
Jensen. David Graham, what's your thing in the 90s?
Well, I'm going to go back to what Lee said. I think you're going to know what I'm going to say. It's going to be Football Italia for me, 100%. It was like on a Saturday morning, I used to wake up, because I never had Sky. I don't think Harper had Sky. I think Holland and Paul, you had cable. So there was no football at all, was there? So
cable.
Saturday mornings.
Dodgy cable.
Yeah.
I'm the odd one out there. I only had terrestrial telly, so...
His mum was knocking off the old caretaker.
Yeah, the old caretaker, topless darts. I used to watch that at 10 o'clock at night, March.
I remember that, yeah. I still watch that at Louis' house, actually. But
Euro trash.
Waiting for each other to fall asleep so you could have a wank.
Oh, yeah, that as well, yeah.
I miss about the old days.
Graham, yeah, go ahead.
The Saturday mornings used to be Transworld Sport when you woke up. Do you remember Transworld Sport on Channel 4?
Yeah, but that wasn't that a mixture program of sports, Graham?
Huh?
Wasn't that a mixture of sports as well?
That's the one, yeah. You had that first, and then you had Gazzetta Football Italia. And it would be James Richardson, wouldn't it? And he'd be showing you the goals from the previous week. Then he'd be focusing on this week's games. He'd had interviews with all the top stars that were coming up. And then he'd show goals from like Coppa Italia. So when you watch that week in, week out, you get to know some of the players, didn't you? Do you know what I mean? Because I've never seen any Italian football before then. Only USA 94, Italian 90 and Euro 92. But like Lee said, I barely remember it. I have to go into YouTube now to just get some information, because I think, like, Thomas Brolin, I don't remember much of him at Leeds, to be honest. Do you know what I mean? Because he came over quite early in the Premier League. So it's always going to be Football Italia for me. It's going to be the kits. Massive fan of the 90s kits. And also, it's got to be that theme tune. With it being football as well, that's got to be the most iconic theme tune for me personally, the Gazzetta Football Italia. Just speaks match of the day for me, but... yeah, that would be my number one miss of the 90s, Football Italia, because it was completely different. And we had nothing like that.
That's still going on today. People are still doing
it. Basically, yeah. But now, when you put you've got BT Sports, Sky Sports, Premier Sports, etc. You've got football 24-7, haven't you? I mean, you used to have, like, on Italian football, you used to have Roma-Lazio. That was free to air, that massive derby like that. Now you have to pay subscription fee to watch that. Yeah. So that's how different... Yeah, I know it. Time's changing that, but yeah. That's for me, always Football Italia. So you left, Paul, isn't it? Your 90s. Yeah, so, what, well, you mean to most about the 90s, sir?
Yeah, I think for me...
Nick Pieber at Monaco.
Who?
Pieber at Monaco.
The 90s for
We're
me...
We're not going there.
Colacone. The 90s for me, I think there's more than one thing. I think, as you said, I think that the fact that it was more limited, and although it's great now having so much more football constantly you can see, but now it's just too much almost, because there is all these platforms you have to pay for to watch them. Whereas before, everyone would watch Match of the Day and everyone had the same kind of experience together. Whereas now you can watch a game for 90 minutes, or I'll watch a game for two or 3 minutes. So I think you've lost that part of the football. It's overindulged in football now, but we've got too much. I also think that, obviously, United in the 90s versus Arsenal, so the Wenger versus Fergie era, I think that was, it would never be replicated. It was just unreal. It was just Vieira Keane, you know, Van Nistelrooy, a little bit later on in the 90s, but the Van Nistelrooy-Keown incident. I mean, you could write a book, a lengthy book on just those matches, just the individual matches, not in between, just the matches. But the other thing is goal
celebration. When did Wenger take over Arsenal? When did Wenger take over Arsenal?
96, 97.
Yeah, 96, 97.
He won it in 98. He won it in 98 and took over halfway the season before that, didn't he? So I think it was 97.
Yeah.
I think it was earlier than that. You had Bruce Rioch, didn't you? It's got to be, I'm thinking 95. Is it 95-ish? No, it's definitely been 90s anyway.
When he won the league in 98, that was his first full season.
How was it?
Yeah.
Well, he kind of changed the way football was played in the Premier League, in my eyes.
So Wenger signed for Arsenal in September 1996. So, yeah. So in that 96 to 2000.
Mid-90s, I mean,
not past 2000, but 96 onwards. But also goal celebrations. You know, in the 90s, you had so many iconic goal celebrations. Whether it's Shearer running with just one hand, or it was Sharp and Giggs doing something. Or what was it, the FA Cup game with the Ducks, where they were on their knees and they
Crowder doing the bugle off the touchline.
I thought you'd mention that one, yeah. He used to wear the noseband as well, didn't he?
Well, yeah,
right. I used to wear them.
That's the greatest celebration of all time. Never been challenged. The greatest celebration of all time. He'd been banned for life who'd done that now.
I tried them at school, them things that Robbie Fowler wear. I'll tell you what, they made a massive difference, man.
You have got some
oodles. Oh, yeah. They were. They did work. The old nasal strip, the old nose strips, they were quality.
That's my next point. Exactly what you just said. It's the politics in football.
Well, this is the thing about the Keane and Van Nistelrooy incident. The thing that went on during that, when he missed the penalty and they all jumped, it would have been six aside.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If that was today. Do you know what I mean? Like, Keane's pushing him, Lauren's pushing him. You know what I mean? It would have been sent off all over. The game would have been abandoned.
But this is one of the things now that, you know, we've lost from the game. It was a man's sport before. Not to say it's not a man's sport now, but you know, when you went to play on a football field, you went out there and it was not to war, but you went in for a good old battle. The rivalries of teams in the 90s, early 2000s, I think, was there a little bit as well. But the introduction of VAR, the introduction of the, and this, it ties in well with football clubs becoming businesses opposed to football clubs. Because once you started doing that, you had an element of commercial and fans being turned into customers, which is now compared to the 90s. It's such a different aspect of it, of what we're seeing now. In the 90s, you can go and watch a game. Stuart Pearce will take someone out and he might get a yellow card. now you can't even tackle. So just the whole way that football was played in the 90s, it had speed.
Yeah, that's why it's the best era.
Yeah, you name one player in the Premier League this day and now that you'd say he's an out-and-out tackler.
No.
Well, it's not an art anymore, is it? It can't be an art, because if you get it slightly wrong, then you're off.
Kante's like, he's like the best tackler of the ball. And look how small that little fucker is. Like, you'd think, imagine like someone like Keane Vieira, if they kicked him, they'd end up fucking, he'd break his legs.
See, the thing is with Keane Vieira now, like, with that aspect of their game of being a hard man, if they had to take that out of their game now, in this era, would they be as good as they was back then?
I doubt it. Well, because technically they weren't great. Well, Vieira wasn't bad, but...
I think they'll still be the same with the ball at their feet. I don't think that changes. They have technical ability, but as Dave's saying, their sort of their personality, their leadership, maybe, it might disappear.
They needed the grit. And if you take that grit away from their game, they ain't half the players that we know them to be.
Like
they?
When we were on the WhatsApp group the other day, we was having that debate about about Paul Ince and about his leadership and stuff like that. You know, from what you read, what you hear, you know, Roy Keane was a much bigger influence, I think, to the Man United, the other players, than what Paul Ince was. They had a bit more respect for him. You know what I mean? So, like you're saying...
Was it respect or was it fear?
A bit of both, I would have thought. From what you read and hear, I would say it was a bit of both.
But like I say, the players these days are such pansies and pampered. Like, they wouldn't have anyone to like strike fear into them week in, week out. They'd just leave, wouldn't they? Or get their agent to start playing up and off. You know, like... It's like what you said, Graham. That's what makes the 90s like quality, because we didn't have all this crap that you got now.
Yeah, definitely. Loyalty
was a big thing as well in the 90s.
Who?
Loyalty was a big thing in the 90s. This day and age now, they go from club to club to club. Like,
okay,
I'm going to do that many one. Transfers. Right,
Giggs, you're going to say Giggs and Letizia, aren't you?
Well, there was loads of players.
Carragher, Gerrard.
It's a good point. The Bosman ruling came in the 90s, in the late 90s. We started to see the talks of the Bosman rulings and how that would implement in the game going forward. And you say loyalty in football. That's another thing. If you sign for a club, Tony Adams, obviously, you know, wasn't there for life, but you had a lot more life as at clubs, or they were pushed on by the clubs opposed to them asking to leave. You know, after two seasons not winning the same, I'm going to be off. People, Alan Shearer is a prime example, you know, of players signing for clubs over loyalty rather than transfer fees or how much money they get paid.
Well, Shearer says he doesn't regret leaving Newcastle, but I think that's the biggest lie of his life.
He couldn't come out and say that now, because he's loved that much that if he said anything against them, like, you know, like his legacy
agreed,
for them.
Agreed, but like I said, deep down, he knows.
Yeah. Well, like I say, he could have signed for United. I mean, they you know what I mean? They break the transfer fucking record every single fucking year. But yet, they didn't buy the league, as we were fucking saying the other day. Yet, Shearer must regret not going there. They won the Champions League, all this other stuff. You know what I mean?
Well, Graham, what do you think in Shearer staying at Newcastle and not going to a bigger club?
It's a hard one, isn't it? Obviously, he could have played at that time. There's not. I don't think there would have been a team in Europe that he wouldn't have got in his prime.
No, he would have got in
at the time. So really, he could have gone anywhere, couldn't he? But so, unless you know him personally, it just does sound like loyalty, doesn't it? Because it just for an you know, he'd gone to United, he'd probably going to got more wages. And who else? Real Madrid, teams like that, Barcelona. The lifestyle would have been better for him out there. You know, European football.
He went there in his prime, though. You know, like he. Obviously, he was a Newcastle fan and stuff like that. You know, like, when players start to dip a bit, they usually go to their boyhood club, didn't they? And they're a hero and all that. He went there, when he was still banging in goal. I know that time Newcastle had money and stuff, didn't they? They were challenging, you know, like, I love it if we beat them. They were at that sort of time, didn't they? So, like, and you would have thought, like, even if he had gone United when United was sniffing around him, he still could have gone to Newcastle.
Holland, you said the right thing. I said in terms of he could have gone, but when you said Newcastle had money at that stage, you've got to remember Shearer was seen as the piece of the puzzle that was going to take them to the next level. So Keegan would have sold it as, look, you come and sign for us, your boyhood club, we'll knock them off their perch. We will win the league with you in the helm.
They had a good go, though, didn't they? They had a good go with Shearer and Ferdinand up front. They're unlucky. You're right with what you're saying. Yeah.
Go on to Holland's one for a second. England, right? The classic old debate. The England of the 90s or the golden era of the early 2000s is a big debate. Should they have won more? Should they have done this? Should they have done that? But the team of the 90s, I mean, as you said, 92, 94, a bit young for that, really. Obviously, we've seen stuff. But 96, 98 and 2000, I mean, what a team. Why did you not win anything?
I think they're better teams than England in 98. Personally, I think France, Brazil, Germany, they were all stronger teams. But in 2002, when the European Championships, when Rooney, like Donny's metatarsal, I think we went out in the semis or whatever. I think we should have won that tournament, but I think our England team was probably better then in 2002 than it was in 96 and 98.
Really? Oh, man, 96 was some team though as well. You looked, there was some team there, man. But yeah, that 2002 team was quality, but nostalgia.
We watched the 1996 game, didn't we? We watched the 1996 game against England, Scotland, when we was in lockdown the last time, and we was all talking about it. Well, England, they dominated us pretty much. England, in all those games, we never had the ball. Switzerland. When we played Switzerland, like we never had the ball, we would just lump it forward to Shearer. I didn't think we needed a manager in my eyes. Like, I know Venables was there, but personally, I don't think we played good football in those tournaments. I know we got to the semis, but if you actually like look at the games, I don't think we was technically great. I don't know what you think about it, but
it's a knockout competition, isn't it? So you don't really need to be consistent. So I don't know. We got close, didn't we? I mean, if you go even further back to 1990, if you watch any of the games back then, I mean, how England beat Cameroon, I'll never know. You're only for Lineker's late penalty. But if you watch the semi against West Germany, the better side with ball at feet were England. It was just done us by penalties. And then in Euro 96, Germany again, penalties. They're like our nemesis, as in 90s football, weren't they? I mean, I've gone off a bit of ball now, but they would always seem to be in the way, if that makes sense. Any tournament, not USA 94, because we weren't good enough to qualify, but they always seem to be in the way in major tournaments in the 90s, didn't they? Don't you think? Germany
were in everyone's way, though, weren't they? Because
going back to what Lee was saying about England not being playing very well, I don't think the Germans played well at all. They just know how to get the job done.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
They're disciplined, man. They're just regimental. They just know how to win.
Do you think that goes hand in hand with English clubs not really being in European football for such a long time? So the English style of football was, you know, rough and tumble. It was seen as to beat England. It was grit. It was determination. It was the bulldog spirit that England always had, that tag of, you know, you're going to game against England. Technically, they're not great, but they'll give you a go. You know, whereas if there was in Europe, it was used a lot in for big clubs in England winning the European trophies for so long, is because they was out of Europe for such a long time. And until Wenger came in 96 for Arsenal, that was a pivotal change in the momentum of English football completely, not just on a domestic level, but I think international.
Dropping caps turned up.
I think it made a big difference.
Pussy, Dave.
Pussy's turned up.
Do you think it had an effect on anything, not being in Europe for so long?
Well, what do you mean? We were in Europe? Which I don't understand what you're saying there. What, England teams were in Europe?
Yeah, because the England players at the time were playing in a domestic league in England, and they were playing against each other. They weren't really going in the continent playing Barcelona, Real Madrid, AC Milan, Juventus.
Yeah, we were banned until about 92, 93, I think. And then you had Paul. Do you remember the free foreigner rule?
Yeah.
When, Barcelona had Stoichkov and Romario, and United had to play, they had to drop Keane, Irwin, Schmeichel, Cantona, because you were only allowed three foreigners in the side. I think that's when the English teams, I think that's when they went back into it. I'm not too sure.
Yeah, you're right.
Because of the Heysel thing.
Yeah. So do you think that had an impact on English football progressing in tournaments? Because we didn't.
No, I don't. I think money had an impact, mate, personally. I think money had an impact.
In
the
what
amount
sense?
Of money English clubs are spending to get the best players to go and try and compete in Europe.
Okay, Holland?
I feel, let me go off slightly, you know, it did affect like English players never went abroad to play, did they? I know you had hints that went to Gaza, turned up at Lazio, you know, like, but you know, like everyone, all these, when the foreign invasion came, they all came to the Premier League. But English players, and it still happens now, you get like, not they don't very often go abroad. Did that have an effect on us not winning something? You know what I mean? But training in a different climate, you know, like learning, you know what I mean? So, you know, could it be that?
Yeah, but okay, back, so going back onto what this topic what we're talking about, but in the 90s, do you think, I don't really record many like players playing out of different nations, if that makes sense. So like the Germans, you could probably, out of their 11, I reckon 9 of them probably played in Germany. It's like the Spanish. I reckon 9 of them, 10 of them maybe played in Spain. Same with the Italians. I don't think there was that many people playing abroad from different countries, if that makes sense. You had the odd one like Ginola. Like you had the odd one, but you didn't have like, it wasn't an actual full group. If that makes sense. The Brazilians probably went to Spain.
England. So was it detrimental England to only ever play English players, only ever play in England? Whereas Germany, they're all better than us technically. Italians are, Spanish are. But for us as a nation to be just always in England, did that affect us? Do you see what I mean?
Well, just changing tack slightly, going back to what you said about Graham and Holland about foreign invasion, as you put it. I'll use exotic signings. I mean, that was like in the 90s that we miss now, because if you look at Arsenal, Wenger was probably a catalyst for that as well. That was a real, everyone was foreign, French people, and everyone was coming in. Before, you might have the odd signing per team. I think Barrowden brought in like Emerson, Ravanelli, Janino and a short space of time. But it was exciting when you had one or two or three in a club. And now it's kind of, if you've got three English people in your first 11, it's a rarity, really. I mean, that's what I do miss that in the 90s, and the fact that someone would come in and you didn't know he was any good, really. You'd go, oh, he was brilliant. I remember at school, when I very, very clearly with Harper, that Jack Stampstein for United, and he had a rocky few games at the start, and Harper's like, oh, he's shit. And it was Man United versus Liverpool. He's always, oh, he's rubbish, he's pants. I didn't know. No one knew who he was, really. I used to get the Man United magazine and then profile players and give you a bit of information. And I remember, and it was Man United Liverpool, the day before, it was a midweek game, I think it was. It was an FA Cup game. And I spoke to Harper, and I was like, tonight, I said, he'll show you, he's a world-class defender, he'll stop Owen in his tracks. And he had Owen in his pocket all night. I had no knowledge that that was an app, and I just put faith in him. But it was that kind of thing that it was nice not to have loads of knowledge of someone coming in and having a bit of a punt on someone. So that was obviously detrimental to the Premier League now, I would say. But who was your favourite signing in the 90s? A foreign export. Who was your favourite, most influential person that came in? Not excluding Northern Ireland, Scotland. I mean, proper, you know, across the shores. We'll start with Harper.
Probably David Ginola. Like, obviously, I had a little soft spot for Blackburn. So when Shearer kind of left...
Soft spot my ass.
Yeah, well, I did. So when Shearer left, obviously, to go back to Newcastle, obviously, look, when I was growing up, obviously, I wanted to be a striker. So, like, Shearer was my best. Like, he was the best. So... obviously, I used to love him wherever he went. He stayed at Newcastle, but then obviously I watched more Newcastle. And yeah, for me, Ginola, like, I watched him against Man United. Well, he tore Neville to pieces. Like, he was the best import. After him, probably I'd say Zola, but I'll go with Ginola.
Yeah, so Holland, so who would you say was the biggest foreign import in the 90s for you?
Everyone knows what I'm going to say. Everyone knows what I'm going to say. Been an Arsenal fan. It's Dennis Bergkamp. Untouchable. Like, Zola, technically, quality. Ginola, I'm not having him. I've had anywhere near Bergkamp. He couldn't even lace his boots. They're still, you go on Twitter today, they're still putting Bergkamp's skills like he's playing now. That's how he tore it up. Unbelievable, Jeff. So, yeah. It came in before Wenger. That was old Bruce Rioch signing. I mean, that's a legacy. And David Platt, who used to play for Bari. They came in together. You know what I mean? But no, sorry. Like, 90s, Bergkamp's unbelievable. I'll argue this till the cows come home. Dennis Bergkamp all day, every day.
Let's get Graham, who do you think? And then I'll give you mine.
If you're talking for, personally, he wasn't the best foreigner to ever come to the Premier League. But for me, watching him from when the Premier League first started and as he moved on in his career, one of the most exciting ones I've ever seen is Andrei Kanchelskis. Reason being, on that right wing, when he got that ball, it was all he did was, right, I'm going to beat this man, I'm going to beat that man, pump it in the box. And he'd done that throughout his whole United career. He'd done it when he went to Everton, he'd done it when the Glasgow Rangers, and he'd done it when to Fiorentina. I know when you get a bit older, you lose a bit of pace and whatnot, but just to see a winger now, in this day and age, beat one or two men and pump the ball, you don't see it anymore.
Well,
so for me personally, watching him was one of my favourite foreigners. Not the best foreigner. I'm going to have to go with Holland, with Bergkamp, literally on the way he controlled the ball. I mean, one of my favourite ever players is Jari Litmanen to control the ball. Him and Dennis Bergkamp, they're from the Ajax Academy as well. Holland's just summed it up for me for Bergkamp. But before I get on to you, Paul, I did have a little, not a crush. I used to like Kanu. I used to like the way he was Ajax as well. Kanu, very tall, gangly, gaunt-looking bloke, but he could control the ball. He knew where the goal was. He was very strong as well. He's an unusual player. But yeah, but I'd say Kanchelskis, Kanu, and Dennis Bergkamp for me, number one.
Graham, you know you're talking about Kanchelskis. I said Ginola because, like how you said, you had a crush on Kanu. That's why I kind of said Ginola, because I had a crush on him. I just, he was good looking. He was a flair player.
Whoa.
No, but technically.
Hold on a minute. You just said Bergkamp. You fancied him. You doubt what we're
no.
doing it.
No.
I had a crush on him and he was a good looking fella. So you're just coming out there.
He had it all, the fella.
For you, you were fat and ginger. So obviously everyone's good looking for you. But come on, you can't come on here in the public domain and say you fancied Ginola.
I think crush is the wrong word. Crush is the wrong word, I think.
I just used to love watching him play football. But technically, Bergkamp, yeah, he was head and shoulders above the rest. But going back to the Kanchelskis, so you said about like a winger who just now literally just toes it past. I feel like the only player that I've seen do that for a long, long time is that fucking
Theo Walcott.
St. Alain Maximum for Newcastle.
Oh, he's
I don't know if you've ever watched him, but...
Yeah, I've seen him, but...
He looks frustrating, but he wants to beat a player.
Like, how long has he been there at Newcastle now?
He's been, I don't know, maybe a year and a half, 2 years, yeah, mate. Yeah.
Maybe when he's been there a bit longer, I might put him in the same bracket.
I'm not putting him in the same bracket, no, not at all, but I'm just saying that he's the only one in the league. Like, you see, you know, like Liverpool, that or all the possession teams, they get down the line, they come all the way back.
See, the thing is now you don't have wingers now. And there's no wingers. There's no one crossing the ball. Like Alex Ferguson, it was just attack, attack, attack. Wingers just belting balls in all day, every day. You don't see that now.
Look at that. Sheringham, Cantona, Nistelrooy. They all had physical presence.
For me, impulse, I mean, there's so many... quality ones. I mean, De Canio, Carboni at Sheffield Wednesday when they were a pair together. Yapstam, I thought was...
Lombardo. Remember Attilio Lombardo?
There were so many good imports.
Bald Eagle. Interesting,
Bergkamp, and both of you said, Holland and Graham, you both said Bergkamp. I heard over Henri. I was a bit of a surprise for that. Obviously, Cantona is for United, the biggest catalyst.
Henri weren't in the 90s, though.
When did Henri sign for you?
Henri never signed in the 90s.
It must have been late 90s, Dave.
It could have been 99.
I think it was the summer of 99. So
he played in the 98 World Cup.
It was the 99-2000 season that you signed him. So technically, he's a lot late.
Henri, you know, everyone knows I love Henri. Like I say, and the way he came, he was at Juventus and he was fucking... He was having a torrid time, wasn't he? Pony, a left winger or whatever, come to Arsenal, then get stuck him up front. Oh my God, the rest is history.
Yeah, he was.
So for me, Cantona, I think, is the biggest influence. But I think one of the best players I love watching, it wasn't here for long, was Ravanelli. I think, in terms of just joy to.
How many years did Cantona do it for, though?
The Cantona debate is interesting because I think Bergkamp and Cantona are very similar in terms of influences at the club. Kepner never did it in Europe was one of the big things that was said. But in terms of picking up a team and just transforming a team.
Neither did Bergkamp, really. Kant didn't fly.
Yeah, Bergkamp was scared to fly. Fuck, so he didn't go to half the European games. I think Cantona dined off the fact that and all the collar up bollocks and walking around like fucking the fucking cock of the walk and all that, and then kicking that fan in the air, which was an unbelievable moment, that. If we're going on moments, that's up there. But you know what I mean? But no, I think it was Cantona was quality, but I think everything that went with Cantona was made him in the public eye, made him what he was like. You know what I mean? It wasn't just football with him.
But that's a thing that
he was back good. In the 90s,
it was characters. You had characters of the 90s. And you're saying it was Cantona just what Bergkamp, if you're looking at just a player, it's hard to argue Bergkamp, Cantona, everyone's got an opinion. But Bergkamp, you didn't know much about Bergkamp. It was just Dennis Bergkamp, didn't fly. If he did fly, I think you might have had a bit more of a chance in Europe over that period, but that's never another day. But I think with Cantona, it was the whole... Bruno's been linked to him now at United in terms of that catalyst. I don't think they're anything alike, personally, in terms of influence. I think that it's a different era. With Cantona, when he came in...
He's good, though, Bruno.
There's no doubt he's good. But when Cantona came in... under a prime Ferguson that ruled of not, it was fear almost. What Ferguson said, everyone did. You read all the books and different people, Ferguson's book, Beckham's book, all these books. Cantona was the one player who just got told, do what you want. I don't care what you do, just go and do what you want. And I think off the pitch and on
he
the
did,
pitch.
He did do what he wants, ran into the crowd and kicked a fellow in the head.
Well, there you go. Imagine that happening now. That's it. But I mean, Everett did.
That hit me back for life.
Right. So, yeah, so 90s players, obviously, Janino, Ravanelli, were just fantastic to watch. And I think they were the first smaller club bringing in the big imports in terms of en masse. And that's what started opening the door for other players to come in and to be signed. Harper, Ginola, you said, obviously, a big one. Did he revolutionise the winger in England? I think Kanchelskis definitely did. I think if you look at Kanchelskis, he did change football in terms of that classic winger of bombing down the wing, cutting it, beat a man, bosh it in the box.
What about Giggs? Giggs was the other side
Sharp,
of him, wasn't he?
And Sharp at the same time, wasn't it? Sharp.
Yeah.
Lee Sharp was very underrated, in the early 90s. If you look back at the Premier League years, the amount of goals he scored and assists that they put in for McClare and Hughes and Cantona, he was decent, Lee Sharp. I'm surprised he didn't get more England calls, you know?
Cool. So I think we've finished that one with the debate there on 90s. I think we can all agree that 90s football has got so many avenues to go down. It was definitely the best era. So I'm going to do a little quick quiz. We'll do the first one. So all I'm going to do, I'll play you a clip of a famous commentary moment throughout the 90s. This era, there was obviously a lot of catchphrases that were played upon. So I'll play you a clip, and all you've got to do is the first person to tell me the game. Gets the point. And then that's all he got to. So the game it was in, and then you get the points. Does everyone understand basically what that is?
Yeah.
Okay. You got to guess the game. Yeah.
Yeah, so all I'm going to do, I'm going to play the commentary. So it's a famous bit of commentary that's kind of renowned for this game. You give me the answer. First person, if you just, on this case, just once I get it, but just put your hand up for the first person I see, put their hand up, I'll hand it over to you. If you okay, so listen to this.
To the right, Lineker and Howells to the left. Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, he's there! Brilliant!
Okay. Lee Harper. Lee?
Well, I'm going to say that is Arsenal Tottenham in the FA. Yeah, was it? I think it was semi-final.
Yeah,
was it semi-final?
I think they played Forest in the final.
Yeah, funny enough, I don't want to remember shit like that.
Well done. It was 2-1 to Tottenham in the semi-final. Well done, Lee Harper. That's a point to Harper. So I think that's it for this week, guys. So we'd love to hear from you in terms of what you would like us to talk about. I'm going to give everyone a brief now on what next week's topic is going to be. We're going to stay in the 90s, obviously, but we're going to have more of a debate next week about an individual topic. Next week's topic is going to be Del Piero or Battistuta in the 90s, who was the better striker? So with that, thanks very much, guys, and we'll see you next week.
You can't win anything with kids.
I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
How much are the players looking forward to Arsene Wenger arriving?
Sports Social Podcast Network.